Saturday Conversation. I'm joined by Brian Newbert and Tom Deanhart. Want to thank our sponsor, the Purdue Union Club Hotel, newly reinvented facility on campus. It's a beautiful one. And on this kind of, it's a gorgeous day in West Lafayette. People are out and around and making their way on campus. And that's one of the great things that once we get back to having a lot of people on campus, the Purdue Union Club will have a lot of that as well. And also want to remind folks too, that if you're interested in subscribing to goldenblack.com, we have 40-day free trials available. And we've had a lot of people taking advantage of that. Obviously a lot of basketball coverage. Brian's knocking out of the park with that as we get to head to the NCAA, Big Ten and NCAA tournament. And of course, Tom with spring football. We'll start today on a sad note, certainly, and we talked last week, and I'm glad we did. We did talk about last week's Sunday conversation, I believe it was, Larry's birthday, his 74th birthday, and of course, most of the Purdue nation, so to speak, knows of Larry's passing early this morning from his home, or he was in Florida, I should say. And you know, I want to start with you, Brian. We've known Larry, and Tom, I guess, probably knew him earlier, at least listening to him. But you've known Larry, working with him here at Golden Black over the years. And a sad day for Purdue basketball, even after a great win last night. It certainly a moment of pause and to commemorate a very examined life in Larry Clisby.
Yeah, I mean, it's he's obviously somebody who's been very much missed all season long. This is Purdue's first, you know, season without him. He was an enormous part of the program. I mean, there were times like in the NCAA tournament when we could go in the locker room and stuff like that. You'd see him in the room with the coaches, and the way people fawned over him, you didn't know who the head coach was.
Yeah.
Because of the gravity he carried with him. And it was, you know, I'm going to write this in my column for Monday, but he was Purdue basketball royalty, essentially, but he never leveraged it. All you got from him the last couple of years was gratitude about everything Purdue did for him, and how Matt Painter stood up for him so many times, and how Elliot took care of him, and all of this stuff, how much his relationship with that staff had to be one of a kind in the country. And I mean, he's incredibly close with Painter. He's incredibly close with Elliot, literally family. And I think that I shouldn't say literally when it's not literally, but
yeah. Family.
As close to family as you can get. And I think, you know, Kliz's significance, you know, toward Purdue, this has always been a program that has always tried to project its past, you know, in terms of loyalty, in terms of a lot of old school sort of sensibilities, you know, everything Gene Katie put in place here. Larry was kind of one of those bridges from everything Purdue's been to where Purdue's going. And obviously he was very close with Katie. He was very close with Painter, and he's one of those old heads that, you know, was kind of around for so long under Katie, but also carried over into the Matt Painter era here, him, Tom Ryder, people like that, you know, Matt Painter's really kind of leaned on, you know, for counsel over the years and for friendship and whatever else. But he was just an enormous part of that program. The players liked him. Everybody around him, I think, valued their time with him. I always came to appreciate his wisdom. He was an interesting guy to talk to. If you think of him as just the voice on the radio, or just kind of that Ron Burgundy sort of caricature, had a little bit of that to him too.
He did.
He was so much more than that. I mean, he was one of the most thoughtful people I knew. I had some relatively in-depth conversations with him over the years, over relatively serious matters. And he, very insightful, very wise. And, you know, I didn't get a chance to spend as much time with him the last couple of years, obviously, and obviously spend time with no one the last year. But I remember before the Northwestern game at Northwestern last year, for whatever reason, I didn't have a lot to do before the game. I must have had all my work done or whatever. So I just went down to the floor, and I just kind of sat down there with him for about 15, 20 minutes and just chatted. And that was actually probably the last conversation I ever had with him. I'm very, very glad that I did that. But I can think of numerous instances over the years where he'd be at practice, I'd be at practice, we'd sit next to one another and just chat. And it very rarely was about basketball. It was usually about World War II, about various illnesses, about various medicines, whatever it might be. And always just a fascinating guy to talk to. Obviously, his life wasn't always, you know, the straightest line, but he, I think he left the world as the best version of himself. I think he grew considerably, you know, over the years. And what I will remember most about Larry is just the wisdom and the gratitude that he always kind of wore on his sleeve.
Yeah, well said. And I think, you know, I know he felt that kinship with you over the years, certainly. And that was an important thing. And I was impressed today, obviously, and not surprising, but just the cascade, I should say, a number of tweets from a number of folks that, you know, reached out to him to say exactly that. He was more than Purdue basketball, but he was royalty in a very unique class of broadcaster, kind of an old school situation, but in basketball. And you're right. You know, you think about the fact that he stood up at Matt Painter's wedding, and that was reciprocated as well in one of Larry's recent weddings, and that was important as well. Tom, you obviously, we talked last week, you know, you like me can remember him doing games. I remember him doing football back in the, and I remember when he got here in the late 70s and was hired by Henry Rosenthal, WASK. But you know, again, a unique voice, and says a lot about Purdue fans, I think, and Larry Clisby, that relationship, but that this was a very, very close tie.
Yeah, Henry Rosenthal, wow, it's another name from the past. Alan, yeah, you people should check out Alan's tribute on the website. Just a lot of good anecdotes. Alan's a good storyteller, and you kind of get another layer texture to Larry Clisby's life and career at Purdue. And yeah, I was like you, Alan. It was Larry Clisby and Lanny Siegel, right?
Yeah, right.
The color guy, of course. A lot of us still know Lanny. Yeah, big White Sox fan. And I remember watching, even after I got out of college, Larry Clisby doing the Jim Coletto show, when he had the coaches shows and the Fred Akers show.
Going way back,
yeah. You know, yeah. Brian, I think Brian summed it up well. You know, what a better way, if somebody could say that about me when I perished, that I left as a better version of myself. I mean, you know, that's the biggest challenge we all have, is conquering ourselves, not a world or a nation, but if we can conquer ourselves, and it sounds like Larry did that. And, you know, like I said, it was a life well lived. And I think you guys summed it up best. You guys were closer to him, obviously, over the years, but I had glimpses here or there over time, but I certainly understood his importance to Purdue, and obviously, especially that basketball program.
You know, Brian, I like what you said about his gratitude down the stretch, and that was certainly, you know, and Larry had some, and you said well that he was not perfect. Very disappointing when he lost the football job and in the mid 90s, and Joe McConnell came in, and that was very, very disappointing to Larry. But basketball and Gene Cady, they kept very, very close together, and Matt Painter, obviously, that continued that and went to bat for Larry, certainly, yeah, to keep Larry in that position. And I was surprised, Brian, just not surprised, I was just glad, the outpouring of support for him. I shouldn't say I was surprised. I just think even on our readership, people just love the fact that Larry was a homer, loved Purdue, but Larry was a lot more than just basketball too. He had a lot going on outside of that. But when he did basketball, and when he was passionate about Purdue basketball, he was passionate about it. And, you know, I think there's no other way to say it. Go ahead,
he
Brian.
I can't speak much to his presence on the air because I'm at the games. So I don't necessarily hear him, but from what my impression was always, he was almost the perfect voice of Purdue basketball. I mean, he was, you know, Purdue's kind of built around sort of old school sensibilities, and he was kind of cut from that era. I think he had a little bit of a kind of a weathered, life lived sort of voice. And I think he obviously wore it on his sleeve, and, you know, part of, you know, Purdue's generations long identity is just no pretense. And I don't think you got any pretense from Larry. I think he was what you saw what you experienced, and he made no apologies for it. He was as unique an individual as I think I've probably known. It sounds unbelievably cliched and trite to say a guy was one of a kind, but I'll be damned if I've ever known another Larry Clisby, and I'll be damned if I ever do.
You won't. You know, it's funny, Tom, because I can remember in the dark, dark days of the Fred Akers era, you just turn on the radio and you could tell in 20 seconds how bad it was going. They were down 45-3, which they were a few times.
A lot of bad.
But he wore it on his sleeve. And I always said Larry was a terrific television guy on radio. And that's not damning him. That's just saying that's kind of, because you're right, he had the big voice. And he brought it that, but he was, you could tell quickly in basketball, I think he really got better at that. Of course, Purdue won a lot in basketball and had a lot of success. And that was part of it, but you could tell in a hurry how things were going when you tune in.
Yeah, again, I mean, I was talking today to Mike Carman about other iconic voices at other schools and what treasures those guys are. They become almost institutionalized.
Yeah.
Part of the institution, I should say. Probably a better way to say it.
That too.
You know, like Paul Keels at Ohio State, you know, George Blaha at Michigan State.
Don Fisher
in Indiana. I'm sure other schools outside the Big Ten. Gary Dolphin at Iowa.
Yeah.
Those type of guys, you know, are iconic. And again, part of the fabric of those athletic departments. And that's the voice that fans resonate with. That's the voice that brings them their beloved alma mater, their beloved university. And you develop a relationship over those airwaves. And I've done it.
Yeah.
With various announcers over the years. Feel like you're your friend.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean that's another great thing you can say about Larry is his ability to connect with Purdue fans. And again, Brian, as he always does so well, I think, summed up the Larry Clisby, image as really being similar to the Purdue fans. A blue-collar guy comes with no pretense and always got to work a little bit harder. And, I'm ever grateful that I got a chance to experience him doing his thing for Purdue.
Yeah, it's a sad day, and yet, the intimacy he created in radio, which is just the perfect medium for that, as we all know, he's excellent at getting that done. And Purdue fans, he'll never be forgotten. And I think it as long as Matt Painter and Elliot Bloom and the Nate Barretts of the world and are around, that to remember his legacy. All right, Brian. Obviously, and Larry, on his last night on Earth, the was a great one for Purdue basketball last night. A very, very impressive win at Penn State. And, you know, when you win 20 by 21 points in Happy Valley, that's impressive. Brian, this team just seems to really show that it can do just about anything. Having slept on it to now, any other great insight to what you saw in that win at Penn State?
Well, they look better when they make shots, and Purdue obviously made 7 bullseyes last night for Larry, which was something they hadn't been doing, is shooting particularly well this season. But you just watch the game. It was a total clinic. I mean, it was as impressive a performance as, you know, Purdue's put together all season, and they were really good at Indiana. But when you watch what they did at both ends of the floor in that first half, and I only went back and watched the first half because the first half told you everything you needed to know. And I just wanted to cut it short.
and that's okay. That's okay.
But that their energy on defense, their preparedness on defense were extraordinary. I mean, they were a step ahead of Penn State on defense. On defense, Purdue was ahead of Penn State's offense. It felt like you saw them seeing what Penn State was about to do before Penn State did it, reacting accordingly, and just dominating the game. Offensively, you just saw a real purpose in everything Purdue did. Pristine execution, good screening, good ball movement, good everything. It was just, you know, I wouldn't want to bet against Purdue and its staff, you know, on extra prep time. And that's why Purdue had a couple extra days to prepare for Penn State. and looked like it. And it was just an absolute buzzsaw last night. Purdue wins by 73-52, right? The box
right,
score.
Remember, the score was screwed up last night.
It was
they had a wrong box score for about the first half hour. But yes,
that's exactly what I'm reading off right now because I printed it off right after the game. They won by 21 points, but they only scored 71 points. But anybody who watched the game, you know, they could have scored 90. The way they operated offensively, just with 11 and a half minutes to go, they just took the air out of the ball and just stopped scoring. But I was astonished like halfway through the game when I looked up and they had like 52 points and it felt like they had like 75.
Yeah.
Because if you just watch the game, you just saw a team that could do whatever it wanted, whenever it wanted to do it. And I was a little bit disappointed in Penn State in terms of, I thought they were going to be, you know, better than that, but I think Purdue just broke them. And that happens from time to time, but you know, Purdue's got a lot going for it here. I keep saying that every week, but it does. I think it's very much trending in the right direction in a lot of ways. I think defensively they've actually very quietly become pretty good. You know, Jaden Ivey's playing great. Sasha Stefanovic has played great now the last three halves of basketball. They're winning without needing Travion Williams to score 25 points a game. And 6 weeks ago, you had no chance if Travion Williams didn't score a lot. And I just think they're everything's kind of clicking right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Boy, you had some good things to say, Brian, last night on your Twitter about Aaron Wheeler. One of his better, probably his best game of the year. I think you would agree with that. And talk about that and the starting lineup change too, correct? And typically that's not something Matt Painter does if things are going smoothly. But Brandon Newman sat, Stefanovic started. Do you have any reason? I'm not sure if you asked that question after the game, but
he did.
Up with that?
Well, he used it as a vehicle to compliment Stefanovic and said he steadies us. He's a really important presence. Obviously he is. I didn't think that Painter would mess with his starting five this late in the season. I didn't have any really good reason to believe that. I just didn't think it was a Painter type thing to do, to change the starting lineup when you're winning. But obviously I was wrong, and it's hard to argue, you know, Sasha Stefanovic's place in that starting five. He obviously belongs there. Circumstances, all that got him out of there. You know, in terms of the Brandon Newman part of it, you know, I think foul trouble really held him back yesterday. He's going to have to, acclimate a little bit, I guess, to coming off the bench now. I thought he'd been doing some really good things defensively. I think he has to make sure he maintains that part of it, you know, coming off the bench now. I wouldn't, if I were Newman, I wouldn't view this as a demotion. I would view this as you're now the sixth starter instead of the fifth starter, and understand Sasha Stefanovic's value to this team and why that needs to be in the starting five. And it was Jaden Ivey who moved into the starting five for Stefanovic. Obviously he's not coming out of the starting five ever again at Purdue. Never. As long as he's at Purdue, he will start every game the rest of the way, provided he's healthy. To the other part of your question about Aaron Wheeler. Yeah, you know, people view Aaron Wheeler through his shooting percentage because, you know, I think when he was a redshirt freshman, that's where he made his impact right away. Was he made threes. He made wide open threes. And the following season, he stopped making those threes, you know, for the most part. I think that way of viewing Aaron Wheeler now is not all that appropriate. I think now, and starting last year, you should have viewed him more as the guy, what he can do for you when he rebounds, when he defends, when he runs the floor, when he deflects passes, when he's engaged defensively, things like that. Now, he's not been consistent there either. But when he does that stuff, that's where he matters. It's not just the threes. When he's 0 for 4 from 3 or whatever, you know, you've seen a number of times over the last two seasons, you'd prefer him to not be 0 for 4, but it's also not a deal where that's the only way he can provide value. The ways he can provide value are all the things I just mentioned below. The last two games, he's absolutely been doing that at a really high level. And hey, as it turns out, when he's doing that, the threes go in too. So that's always been the deal with Wheeler. It's just when he's playing with energy, when he's engaged, when he's using his athleticism productively, through effort and all that stuff, that's when he's really valuable. And he's not going to be the 15 point a game guy for Purdue ever. He's got to be that Mike Robinson sort of guy who goes from a 3-point shooter to being kind of a garbage man and being a little things guy. And that's the step Purdue's needed him to make. Consistency has never really come his way the last 2 years, but two good games in a row here, if that sets the tone for more positive contributions when the games are more important here in a couple weeks, great.
Yeah, it's a good, it's an interesting comparison with Mike Robinson. He's a longer Mike Robinson. I like his length. He does bring you some certain things around the basket, and he runs, you know, he had a couple hustle plays. He's had several hustle plays of just being there, getting the ball back in the hoop and making a big difference. And he can make a big difference as Purdue runs, hopefully from a Purdue fan standpoint, that can make the run that it wants to make. All right. Now, the one thing that's interesting is obviously, and there are a number of scenarios, and Purdue still has two scheduled games to play. Wisconsin at 9 p.m. I believe it's 9 or 9:30, late night game on Tuesday night, then Indiana on next Saturday. And the Hoosiers, Iowa, basically the scenario is this. If Purdue can win both those games and Iowa loses, and probably Purdue would have to play Nebraska in that scenario too, the Boilermakers can get to that four seed and that double bye. Yet they'll probably face Iowa in game one, pretty much either way they go. So that part's going to be an interesting storyline to watch. Does this matter right now? And right now, I'm not seeing right now anybody in the league, with maybe the exception of Illinois and Michigan, that is heads and shoulders above where Purdue is right now.
I think it matters because I think you still want to win the Big Ten tournament. Yeah. I mean, you obviously, anytime you don't get the regular season title, I think if you want to win a title during the season, you know, the Big Ten tournament's the next best thing. I think the double bye helps you do that, potentially. You'd still have to go through Michigan at some point, I'm sure. But I don't know how much it matters to Purdue from an NCAA tournament perspective. And there's always that age-old question is, do you want the extra games? Do you want the potential for momentum going into the NCAA tournament? Or do you want the rest? And I don't know how to answer that question. You know, I would say the extra rest or whatever would be helpful, but it's not like Purdue's, you know, it's not like it hasn't been a shortened season already. And it's not like Purdue hasn't had a bunch of guys who sat out a bunch of basketball this season anyway. The way Purdue's trending right now, I'd almost rather keep playing if I'm them and just get as many wins as you can get. I every bit want to play that last Nebraska game just out of the sheer vanity of padding my win total potentially. Keep sharpening the knife, so to speak. That would be my stance on the matter. If I'm Purdue, I want to play as many games the rest of the way as possible, but understand the NCAA tournament is the most important part of this season. And I think Purdue will be fine either way.
Yeah. And that scenario may be, you know, as Brian has reported, talked about the fact that Northwestern plays Nebraska on that final Sunday of the regular season. And it, in all likelihood, Purdue would, if they need to play that game, the Cornhuskers, I should say, could bust down to West Lafayette and play that game maybe Monday night or Tuesday night, the week of the Big Ten tournament. We shall see if that game ends up being necessary. All right, Tom, spring football is well underway now, and we're still not out of the month of February, but Jeff Brohm was available after today's scrimmage. I know it's tough because you're not seeing scrimmage, but you are talking to the coach and getting some feedback on where he thinks his team is right now. What are you gleaning from what you've heard and talked to coaches so far with the way practice is going?
Yeah, guys, they are 33% of the way through spring football already. Yeah. Like you said, Alan, it's February 27th. I'm all for it. I like getting going here. March 19th, it's the final practice. Purdue had a scrimmage today. They will have two more scrimmages during spring practices. And, yeah, we talked to Brad Lambert as well on Friday for the first time ever. And like you said, Alan, we got Jeff Brohm today after the scrimmage. So between two of those guys, we learned quite a bit, I think. They're very forthcoming. Brad Lambert's a breath of fresh air, a great guy. He's a disciple of Jim Grobe, the Wake Forest coach. And if anybody knows Jim Grobe, Brad Lambert is exactly like Jim Grobe, a great person and probably a pretty good football coach too. You know, the defense for Purdue, like we thought, it's going to be based on a four-man front. And there are some personnel issues. There's a lot of guys out, fellas. Just a lot of personnel is missing here. I think the biggest takeaway here, we thought this was going to happen, is DeMarcus Mitchell is going to play a Leo spot, guys, a lot like Derek Barnes in 2019. This defense sounds like it's going to be pretty similar to what Nick Holt was trying to do. Be very aggressive. And, again, that Leo spot, you know, Mitchell's going to be able to put pressure as a rusher. He's going to drop into coverage. They want to move him around. They want to move Karlaftis around as well. Brohm's concerned about the defensive tackle spot right now. Lawrence Johnson's now out with injury. That doesn't help. I know Anthony Watts is dinged up too. You know, Jeff had a lot of good things to say about Corey Trice, Dedrick Mackey. At cornerback, he said Geo Howard was playing well until he got hurt. So, again, there's some positive signs here, but, again, they're missing quite a bit of personnel. Jalen Alexander's out. Of course, Yanni Karlaftis isn't practicing either. But they're making do with what they've gotten offensively, guys. No super big revelations there. David Bell, I learned, you know, Jeff said isn't practicing. They just want him to get healthy. I guess he kind of had some injuries last year. There's no need to get your franchise out there anyway. They know what David Bell can do. And they just want to make sure he convalesces and doesn't sustain any injuries. Milton Wright got hurt on Friday, I guess, or actually the first day of practice, I should say. He's out, so the receiving corps is missing their two top options right now. The center, Sam Garvin's out. Gus Hartwig is snapping the ball. I think Gus Hartwig can end up being the center anyway. So, again, a lot of stuff like that. And you know, he was frustrated today, I think, more than anything by the special teams, guys. They spent a lot of time on it today, and the kicking in particular was not good. And he seemed very displeased by that. So a lot of work to do in the kicking game with J.D. Dellinger gone.
Yeah, Brian, I'll give you the last word here as we wrap up this Saturday conversation. You can talk about anything you want to talk about, but in football or anything else that you want to add to the fray as we put a close to this podcast.
If you could string that question along a little longer, I'd appreciate it. I got to think of something.
Okay, I will. No way. Like, you know, and I guess my other comment for you is you look at football and obviously spring ball so early. Jeff Brohm in need of, you know, setting the tone. It appears, you know, you look at the guys they brought in on defense, that he's got guys with experience. We know Mark Hagan well, but that's got to help get this thing turned around, one would think, would at least give them an opportunity to get things going. You've talked a lot about the need for that defense to be really good. That's certainly going to be something that if they're going to get back to where they want to be and get better than they were actually ever were, it's got to be good.
Yeah, and job one has to be simply to connect with these players too. I think last year's coordinator, obviously, I think there was a lot of tumult behind the scenes with all of that. I think the players, you know, there was a significant disconnect there. And I think the most important thing these new defensive coaches can do from day one is get across to those players, connect with them, and establish themselves as guys that these guys want to play for. And I think, you know, spring ball always tells you only so much. I mean, we just ran through the whole laundry list of important guys who aren't even practicing. So It's kind of the absurdity of spring ball sometimes. It's like you're practicing with guys who you're practicing with a skeleton crew so often, almost every year, because it's surgery season. And there's only so much you can tell from a football perspective, but it's the behind the scenes stuff. It's the time that these players are getting to know Brad Lambert or connecting with Ron English or coming to appreciate Mark Hagan's intensity or whatever it might be. That's the important stuff that's happening this spring. And that's the important, that's, you know, in the big picture of Purdue football right now, that's probably one of the most important things anyway. It's just that everybody here gets on the same page, gets on the same playing field and gets moving in a positive direction.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think that's going to be a storyline that We won't know for sure how that all is going to shake out till September the 4th when Purdue opens its season against Oregon State in Ross-Ade Stadium. So, all right, guys, we always appreciate your time. And again, we wish everyone that is involved with the life of Larry Clisby in one form or another some solace in a very difficult day from that standpoint. And hard to do justice to that and how we all feel about Larry, but we appreciated all that he did for us for all those years as well. So I want to thank our sponsor, also the Purdue Union Club Hotel. And a reminder too, if you're interested, 40-day free trials are available for goldenblack.com. Please consider subscribing. So we'll see you and talk again down the road. We'll have our Monday podcast, Golden Black Radio. A lot of coverage this week as men's basketball gets to the peak part of its season. And of course, spring football coverage with Tom Deanhart as well. So have a great week, everybody. Thanks for watching and listening. And we'll see you down the road on goldenblack.com.